Russell.
Russell.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? It's all wonderful. A little warm in here, huh? Whoa, it's always warm in here. Well, good. I was scared I was getting hot flashes or something, you know. Okay. I clear this joint. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. It's a real privilege to be here with you guys. I really enjoy being with AA people in an AA group, wherever I am, you know. It could be, I drove up here with Garrett. There's Garrett over there, and every week he shows up with three more sponsees. Somebody told me he gets $100 for every sponsee. I don't know what's going on here, you know. He's waiting for the check. I don't know what's going on. And they were, he had two wonderful sponsees. There's Ray and Larry. Where's Larry? And Larry. And they were arguing in the car as to who was the most pathetic. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't, as far as I'm concerned, Garrett, it was a tie.
It was.
You know, I believe it was a tie. I'm not going to. I see all old friends a lot. I see Brad here. Where's Brad? There he is. There's Brad. You know, he's like I told him he's like to alcoholism what Greenwich Mean Time is to time. You know, in order to adjust your clocks, you have to go to Greenwich. They turn through Greenwich Mean Time. He is like when you try to figure out how sick somebody is, you know what I mean? He's like, how sick is this guy? He's 3 degrees above Brad. You know what I mean? It's good to see you, Brad. He's there. And, and I see Stevie B is here.
Right.
He must be obviously low on material. It's the only reason. I had a guy once come up to me and he said to me after hearing one of my meetings, he says, now I know where you get all your material from, you know. And I said, you got some guys from JC's house here, right? Woo! Yeah, about 80, what do you got, like 80 guys here from JC's house? It's a great organization. A lot of great people here, a lot of wonderful people, and you know, I love hanging out with AA people. And I was sitting there at dinner eating my broccoli soup over at Lester's, and I was telling Larry, I said, I want to tell you something. I'm sitting here with my broccoli soup, and with you guys, I can't think of a place on the planet Earth I'd rather be. You know, I remember one day about. Many years ago, maybe about 25 years ago, I had taken a young guy, I guess I might have been young at the time, I don't even know, and I was talking to, who is it, Charisse? Where's Charisse? There you are. Charisse said, she wanted to know how much time I had. I said, you're coming up on 90 days, aren't you? So I said, so I told her, I said, you know, I have 34 years in January if I make it, and I said, how old are you? And she said she was 31 years old. I mean, my shoes are 35, you know what I mean? And 31 years old. I said, you know, Charisse, I got sober 3 years before you were born. I mean, when you were floating up there with the angels, you know? I mean, I got sober because they told me you were coming. And I had to prepare. I had to be ready for her, you know? And so it's good to see. I'm so excited about your 90 days. I'm so excited about the stuff that's going to happen in your life. It's going to be unbelievable, you know what I mean? It's going to be great, and that's great. So I was with this guy about 25 years ago, and I think we had just gone to the Arch Creek group, the old Arch Creek group. I'm not even sure it's even around. You know, the groups that I got sober on are like gone. Now, this group is like, it's been around for what, 50 years, 60 years? How many years?
Upper 60s.
This is the oldest study group in like the history of mankind or something. I don't know what it is. But you know, most of the groups that I got sober at with some of the guys that I hung out with, the mentors, the old timers, everything, they're no longer around. I'm not talking about groups like the Arch Creek group. They used to get 200, 300, 400 people, you know, a large amount of people, you know, sort of like this group. And they're not, and every, I used to go there and see, you know, the guys that, like the Ray O'Keefe's, you know, and the Eddie Edwards, and all the Joe Snyders, and they were, and it's all gone. They're all gone. A lot of those guys, the men that I learned from, are passed on, you know, and they're still around in my brain and in my heart, you know. And so I'm hanging out with this young man, and we had just gone to a meeting. I was like Garrett, I suppose. I was always grabbing somebody to go to a meeting and stuff like that. And I was hanging around with this guy. We went after the meeting. We went to Jimmy's place. It's still around, you know. And we were sitting there and eating something, I don't know, dinner or whatever it is. And he looks at me and he says, well, that meeting was great. I said, oh yeah. He says, yeah, it's a good meeting. He says, so what do you guys do? But what do you guys do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him that I was having a great time. I didn't want to bust his balloon too soon. I said, don't you understand? This is like AA Valhalla. This is like in AA, two guys drinking coffee, talking about shit. This is like unbelievable, you know? And he was still looking for the party. I don't know, something like that. So it's good to be here. And I'm going to read a few things. We'll talk about it. This is theoretically, you know. What I really want, whenever I do one of these meetings, number one, I want to speak the truth. I want to be transparent and speak the truth, which means if I'm going to do that, somewhere along the way, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. Now, the problem is, if I tell you about myself, if I'm transparent, you know, it's supposed to be what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Now, listen, believe me, I'm a lawyer. I'm a wordsmith, you know. I talk a lot. I'm perfectly capable of getting up here and, you know, I'm an alcoholic and bullshitting for a while and stuff like that. And the only way I can stop myself from doing that stuff is I really have to reveal some stuff about myself. I got to talk about myself, you know, and that kind of thing. It's very hard to lie about stuff when you're telling your story. And so somewhere along the line, I want to tell you some things I've learned in here and some stuff that's happened, but I want to tell you things about myself. Now, there a little problem arises, a little problem, not a big problem for me, but a little problem. And I'll tell you what it is, because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to reveal things about my life, which are about my life. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, there's the things I've done, things that have worked for me, things that I do in my life now that I find important, you know what I mean, that are big deals for me, you okay? And I don't want to feed you the horse shit. I don't want to feed you, I don't want to water down anything. You understand what I'm saying? If I found a pot of gold, I want to share the gold with you, okay? I don't worry about if I share the gold with you, I'm going to upset some guy in the back row. So, you know, there was this guy in, there was a story in the paper about 3 or 4 years ago about a guy in Palm Beach who was, I think he was a pharmacist, and he was selling whatever the medicine is for chemotherapy. I don't know what you call medicine for chemotherapy, but whatever that was, he was selling it. It was watered down. It was diluted. And apparently when you're taking chemo, you have to take it in certain doses at a certain strength over a period of time, or else you die, or else it doesn't work. And people were dying. They were dropping dead taking this chemo, and they finally found out that he had been watering down the chemo. And I presume the motivation for it was, I guess, it's very expensive and you make a lot of money. So people were dying. Well, I believe that people die in here if you water this thing down. I mean, now the motive for watering this thing down from the podium is not money. The motive for watering this thing down from the podium is wanting people to like you. Because, you see, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. If true happiness will find none at all. And my alcoholism is of the type that it goes on even after you stop drinking. As a matter of fact, most AA meetings I've been to, and I've been to thousands of them, nobody's drinking. It's not a drinking problem. The drinking is really a symptom of the disease. I learned after being an Alcoholics Anonymous for many years that this disease is more than just the drinking is a symptom. My disease centers in my mind, not my body, and my mind. And it centers there, and it has to do with feelings and emotions and attitudes, which will, if left unattended to, maybe drive me to drink or drive me to do a lot of other things. I drank because no woman, no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no job ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. But all those things worked. The women worked. The sex worked. The cars worked. The money works. The overspending works. The going on trips works. Everything, all that other external stuff worked. So listen, if you can't drink, just spend too much. If you can't drink, just, you know, fool around with women or lust after women or, you know, just stalk somebody. I don't know. You know, if you can't drink, just gamble. You know, if you can't drink, just eat. If you can't drink, it all works. It all works to make you feel better than the shitty way you feel now. Just do it as much as possible, as fast as possible, and don't ever stop. Turn on the TV. Text, you know, send the text messages. Don't put down the cell phone. You know, do whatever you have to do so that you don't have to sit alone by yourself and have shitty thoughts about yourself and other people. I mean, the truth of the matter is this disease is worst when you're cold stone sober. Because it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, and they're discontented. Sober! Sober! Unless they again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's why we drink. We drink because we can't stand. I don't know. I used to say to guys sober, I'd say, I need a drink. Pull the freaking car over. I need a drink. I used to get relief pulling up to the bar. You know, as they're bringing the booze to me, I'm getting relief. Because somehow, some way, no matter what's going on, it's just never good enough. It's good enough. I can grab something or get something or buy something. It's good for like a nanosecond, for a week, an hour, a minute, or whatever it is. And then the car's too old. The gal's not pretty enough. You know, I need something more. I need something new. You know, the guy's not funny enough. I need another. I need. And I guess that's why it says in the book, it says one of the things that happens here when they were talking about people that are, in a sense, cured of what we have long before Alcoholics Anonymous, Dr. Young says, it says, hey, listen, there have been people that have been recreated because of spiritual things that have happened to them, a psychic change for thousands of years. And he says in the beginning, when he's talking to Roland Hazard, he says, ideas and emotions and attitudes, which are the driving force of these men. The driving force of these men are cast to one side and they become dominated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. You know, I used to think, you know, when I was walking out of on my wife for 5 years and walking out of my five-year-old child and walking away from my house on Miami Beach on the golf course and walking away to get in my car because I was leaving her because she said to me, essentially, it's either me, your son, your wife, you know, your integrity, and being a husband, or screwing around over in the bars and the booze. And I thought about that, and I made my choice. I made my choice. And there's a lot of guys here divorced here, and they made their choice. There's a lot of gals here divorced, and they made their choice. And my choice was, I would rather go screwing around and throw away my integrity and my self-esteem, although I didn't think that was the deal, then be a man and live up to my oath as a husband and raise that child. And that was the choice, and that's the choice. And you know something? I made that choice cold, stone, physically sober. I'd love to say I made the choices in my life and hurt the people in my life because I was drinking. Oh, drink. Oh, I was drunk. Most of the people I hurt in my life, I heard him and I made it because of selfish decisions based upon self. I made a cold stone sober. And the only thing alcohol allowed me to do is live with my sorry self without blowing my brains out and feeling sorry for myself, you know, or feeling guilty. That's the only, alcohol was a thing that helped me live my life without having to look at what was really going on. So I was an alcoholic way before I took my last drink. I mean, there are people that are in here for a year or two or three or five. We read about them in the newspaper. They're all over the TV now, every other day. You know, I'm amazed about what we're reading on TV now with, you know, some famous people that have either committed suicide or killed themselves or drank themselves to death. And it seems like every other month there's another one. There's another famous guy who's got all the money, who's got all the wealth, who's got all the charm, who's got all the adulation. You know, who's got the girls, the guys, the whatever it is, the money, the things that you know if you had, you'd be okay, and they're dying. And you know what's amazing? The newspaper can never figure it out. They say it's amazing. Nobody other, it's amazing. You know something? Let me tell you the deal. There's 10,000 of those people dying every day in the world, exactly the same way. They're just not rich and famous, and nobody knows them because of this disease. And they die sober. And there are people that come in here and they stay so for 5, 10, and 20 years, and they're thumb-sucking crybabies and living lives of quiet desperation, and they don't even know how to get out of it. And you know something? You pick up that 20-year chip and their medallion, they're going to pick it up. And you're all going to clap, and they're going to go back to their lonely situation. And when you see somebody drink, when you see somebody make that decision to take a drink when they're 10 years or 15 years or 20 years sober, the moment before they take that drink, let me tell you something, they're cold stone sober after hundreds of meetings. So how do you explain that to you? How do you explain that situation? That situation is because my disease goes on after you stop drinking. And it's a disease that centers in my mind. And even though I thought, when I was leaving my wife, if you asked me, you said, and you know, I talk about leaving my wife, but the truth is, I'm just talking about one particular thing. My entire life, every decision I made was a decision based upon selfishness and self. I didn't see that while I was doing it. If you asked me while I was living with my wife, I'd say something like, well, she didn't understand me. You know, just sort of like the way my sponsors say to me, you don't understand. You know what I mean? She doesn't understand me. Okay, I'm different. I want to be free. I want to be able to make my free choice. I was never free. Every decision I made was almost like an automatic pilot. I was compelled. You know what it says? It says ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the driving force. I was driven and compelled to make the insane decision. Let me tell you something. I can't tell you how many. You know, I made good money as an attorney. Good money, and I was always broke. How do you make a lot of money? How do you make a good amount of money, more money than most people, and always be broke? You know how you do that? My sponsor told me that when I was 9 years. He revealed the mystery. I could never understand why my secretary, my receptionist, had more money than I did. I'm making six figures, and she's making like bupkis, and she's always got money, and I'm always broke. And my sponsor said this to me. He said, Russell, when you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I've spent more money I didn't have on things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. You know what I mean? To buy stuff. I was driven to buy that car. No, I couldn't have that car. I had to have that car. It was more expensive, but I had that car. I can't risk losing that car. Yes, I'd have to hock my life, sell my wife, whatever, so I could keep that car. Because if I didn't have that car, what would people think if I had that car? I'd stay up at night worrying about that car. I'd go to meetings, talk to discussion meetings, talking about how I might lose my car. And somebody would say something like, well, why don't you get this type of car? And I said, I can't do that. What are you talking about? I can't do that. 90%, man, I'll tell you something. If you cut out 90% of the purchases, if you cut out the purchases that are made in this country, not based upon need, but just based upon people that have to buy crap in order to make themselves feel better, Macy's and Bloomingdale's would be out of business. Plastic surgery would be Zippo, you know what I mean? I mean, most of the beauty parlors would close, you know what I mean? There'd be nothing going on. You know, you think you do it because, and the bottom line is, it's all about automatic. I was compelled to make, you know, the reason I left my wife and went to the bar, because I could not stay with my, I had to go to the bar. I thought that was a conscious choice. I couldn't stay away from the bar. I couldn't stay away from the gals. I couldn't stay away from that. That's what I couldn't do. I used to look at these guys. Maybe they'd stop in the bar, maybe, for one drink. And then they'd say, I'm leaving. I'd say, where are you going? The booze is here. The gals are, and they'd say, I have to go home. My wife and kids, she's fixing dinner. And I would watch them leave. And I couldn't understand it. But deep down inside, I said, man, I wish I could have a wife. I wish I could have kids. I wish I could be like that. I'd look at people that would go to church, you know what I mean? You know those people, you know, those thin-lipped, you know, holier-than-thou people, and I'd put them down and I'd make fun of them. In the back of my mind, I'm saying, you know, I wish I could be like that. I can't be like that. I'm just not built that way. I am just a screw-up. I am just that guy, you know what I mean? I couldn't help being that guy because that was my attitude about everything, the attitude that alcoholics have. The attitude, you can tell their attitude. It comes out of their mouth. I don't give a shit what they think about me. Who the hell they think they are? I can't believe this has happened to me. They can't do that to me. They don't know who they're screwing with. You know, what the screw is this? It's all bullshit. They're bullshit, I'm bullshit, you're full of shit. It's all the attitude, the alcoholic attitude that comes out of your mouth when you're not drinking. You don't have to be drinking. It's all about cynical, horseshit way of looking at life and being scared of people, places, and things. And you know, hey, and we hang around. Who do we hang around? We hang around people just like us. You know, this is, and so I want to sort of share about some things having to do, in a sense, about the tickle. Well, one of the things I like to do is talk about stuff that, you know, I try to hopefully talk about stuff that you're not going to get anywhere else. Okay, that you're not going to get anywhere else. You know, when I first started doing the steps many years ago, like 30 years ago, you know, I did it by the numbers. You know what I mean? Like the numbers. I said, this is how you do the 10 step. This is how you do the 4 step. You know what I mean? This is the chart. This is the deal. You know, you can get that from your sponsor. You can get that from reading the big book. What I want to try to do is, if I possibly can, and of course, all I can do is try to carry the message. I can't carry the message. I don't have any power to carry the message. All I can do is, it'll probably be the worst 10 step meeting I've ever done in my life. It's going to be the best one I can do tonight, though. Because all this is about is trying to carry the message, and if you're ready to receive it, then you'll hear it. So I want to talk about something that I think has something to do with that, this deal we're on, this road we're traveling. This road we're traveling. Of course, I'm going to talk about God. Like they say in the chapter of the Gnostic, if a mere code of morals and a better philosophy of life would itself helped us, we'd been better all a long time ago, but it didn't help us. You know, so that means we lack the power to stay sober. We lack the power to do the right thing. You know, they have this line in here. It says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we'd have been sober a long time ago. And all I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous is, do the next right thing. All I hear is, do the next. Yeah, I mean, man, you get shit thrown at you for putting down, do the next right thing. If I could do the next right thing forever, I wouldn't be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous because I can never do the next right thing. I could do it for a week, for a month, maybe 3 times in a row, but the 4th time, I ain't giving back the fucking money. I don't give a shit. They ain't gonna get it. I earned that money, I'm keeping that money. You know what I mean? It ain't coming back. Forget it. Yeah, sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. And that's the crap I get in trouble for. I don't get in trouble for the 17 times I did it right. I get in trouble for the one time when I screw up and somebody looks at me and says, why did you do that? And you know what I say? Because I'm an alcoholic. I say, I don't know. And they look at me and say, that's not good enough. You stole the money. What do you mean you don't know? And I don't know how to tell them. I don't know how to tell them the truth. I couldn't help myself from doing it. I couldn't help myself from stealing the money. I couldn't help myself from telling the lie. I couldn't help myself because you know why? Because I'm a liar. Because I'm a selfish, self-centered liar. And I used to drink and I don't drink, I just lie. I just steal. I just cheat. You know, I just can't be trusted. You know, it's alcoholism. Same thing, that's what it looks like. Selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-delusion, delude ourselves. I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. I tell myself, yeah, I screwed you and I hurt your feelings and I killed your cat, but you know, if you hadn't done this, I wouldn't have done that. You know, it's okay. I tell myself rational lies. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, I step on the toes of others, they retaliate. You know? And I think, and they step my toes and they hurt me, usually I think without provocation, but later on I find out that it happened because of decisions based upon self. Decisions based upon self. What is decisions based upon self? You know what it looks like? It's as you live your life, every day you make decisions. And I don't know about you, I'm not selfish, I just want everything to go my way. Is that selfish? I'm not selfish. I just want to win. I just want to get the money and I want to win and I want to be on top. Is that selfish? I'm not selfish. I just want things to happen the way I would like them to happen. Is that selfish? Of course it's selfish. But I don't know how to think any other way. I don't know how to act any other way. That's just the way I am. The way I see things is people should act the way I think they should act. They should be the way I think I should be. The world should be the way I should be. And I can absolutely immediately recognize when things are unfair, when they're not going my way. And I feel sorry for myself and I act badly. And I try to control people. And I try to manipulate situations so that I can win. And I don't call that selfish. That's not selfishness. That's just the way I am. Well, of course that's the way I am, because if you look up alcoholism, which is selfishness, in the dictionary, there's my picture. That's what it looks like. It looks like me. And I hang out with people that talk like me. I hang out with people that think like me. You know, when I'm screwing somebody or doing something stupid, or I'm cheating my wife, or I'm doing something else, or I'm not paying back the money, I go up next to one of my friends and I say, I'm cheating this guy, and I'm screwing that guy, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. And they say, hey, man, you're not doing anything wrong. I just pick guys that think like me. And people that don't think like me, well, they're like stupid church people or something like that. They're self-righteous idiots, you know what I mean? I just don't like them. I put them on the list, I'm crossing them off, and I don't listen to them because they're idiots and they're hypocrites, you know? I just stop listening because I just call them hypocrites and I cross them off the list. And I just tell myself that I'm great and I don't give a shit what other people think about me, when all I do is worry about what other people think about me because I think I'm pretty much a piece of shit, which is why I tell myself all the time I don't deserve to live, and I'm always condemning myself in my mind with all those voices. And I don't even know where they come from. They come from me telling me what I think about myself, really. And the problem is, no matter where I go, no matter what trips, what cruises, I can never get away from me. Because the truth is, I have the capacity to be honest. That's the only thing. If I could only be a sociopath and not give a crap, but the problem is I do give a crap. There is something of God that's redeeming in me that keeps on telling me you're a piece of crap. Because you treat people like, you know, you're like a bum. And it's very, and you know what? I want to feel great. I want to feel great without putting any skin in the game. I just feel like I'm entitled to feel great and have happiness no matter how I act towards people and how I think. And I don't know how to get out of this deal because this is the way I've been thinking ever since I was 2 years old. I didn't even realize I'm thinking crazy until I go to an AA meeting and I hear some guy get up and say, you know, complain about something. And I say, man, that son of a bitch is crazy. And then all of a sudden I say, shit. I was saying that last week. Or my sponsor points it out to me. I don't even realize what craziness or selfishness looks like until I do a 4-step or a 10-step or something like that. And my sponsor points out to me. He says, you know, you're worried about yourself. How do you think your wife felt when you didn't come home until 3 o'clock in the morning? You're worried about how she treated you. How do you think she felt when every night you were out and she didn't know where you are and she was there with a 5-year-old kid? Yeah, and you start saying, how do you? And you say, man, I never thought about that. Because all I think about is my flat tire. Like I said, all I think about is my flat tire. You're dying of cancer. I said, yeah, okay, I'm sorry about your cancer, but look at my fucking flat. What about my flat, man? You know, I got a flat here, you know? It's me, 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 me. You know, enough of me. You know, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? You know what I mean? It's all about me. It's all about what do I look like? What do I think like? What do you think about me? Going on to the next thing about me. And so it says right here, above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And then it says, God makes us possible. You know, all through the book, it says, the only relief is from God. That's what Dr. Young told that guy. He said, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the driving force of these men's lives. This is why you spend the things you do. This is why you hook up with the people, the toxic people you hook up with. This is why you focus on the worldly things that will never get you okay. In the 6th step, when it separates the men from the boys, in the 7th step, it says, we don't want to deprecate material things, but nobody's made a worse job of living their lives by focusing on money, property, and prestige than us. You go to every discussion meeting, any time, I'm going to tell you something, 99% of the people that are complaining, whining, crying, and sucking their thumbs in any discussion meeting, you know what they're talking about? Shit. Stuff. They're talking about stuff. They're talking about the car. They're talking about the boy, they're talking about the girl, they're talking about things. They're talking about the job, they're talking about money. They're never whining about God. They're never whining, crying about helping people. They're never doing that stuff. And all this book is every other page it says focus on him. See what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. But how can you focus on him when you don't want to focus on him? You want to focus, you don't want what we had, you want what you used to have. You just want it all back again. You promise not to drink. Just give me the money back. Give me the guy back. Give me the girl back. Give me the sex back. Give me everything back and I'll be okay. And then, I'm going to be okay. Listen, I won't drink. I won't drink. I won't drug. I won't go crazy. I won't hurt people as long. I'm going to do everything fine as long as everything goes fine for me. You know, as long as everything goes fine for me. As long as everything goes okay, I'll be okay. But here's the problem. It's not going to work that way because it's never going to be always okay. And sometimes it's going to be damn bad. Whether you're drinking or you're not drinking. I mean, I'll tell you, the doctor's going to tell you I have cancer if you don't drink for 20. My sponsor, 30 years, died of emphysema. He quit smoking 27 years prior to that. I mean, shit's going to happen to you and other people. And the people we look up to are the people that go through crap. You understand what I'm saying? And somehow, some way, they have strength to go through it with some sort of grace and dignity, and something we can't do, because, you know, anything happens to us, I mean, we're just crying and whining, sucking our thumb. You know, every once in a while we see some people in here and they seem to have whatever that is, that steadiness. You know, they're not the double-minded man I talked about last week out of the book of James. You know, they're focused on God totally, and no matter what happens, you know, it seems no matter what they're going through, their happiness doesn't depend upon their bank account or whether they have a boy or whether they have a girl, whatever it is. It depends upon their relationship with God, which is what the book says, job or no job, wife or wife, no wife. You know, let no man say he needs his family back. His whole thing depends upon his relationship with God. That's what the book says over and over and over again. And here's the problem. Even if you accept that and you get some relief from it, from focusing on God, there's always that alcoholism. You know, you could have a mind. It's like the Apostle Paul. He said, I got a mind that focuses upon God and wants God. And I got a body, you know, that would like that gal over there. Would like to make her my God. That gal who would like to make him my God. I'd like to make my job my God. I'd like to make my car my job. I'd like to make the Miami Marlins my God. I'd like to make some sports team my God. You know, I'd like to make anything else. I got a mind that wants to do this stuff, and I got a body that wants to do that stuff. I'm in the world, and I want to be everything the world has, and I also want the other thing. And left to my own devices, unless I work at it or something happens, I always tend to go to the right instead of the left. I always tend to get it wrong. You know, it's the narrow way, and few find it. Not the broad highway where many go there. Man, I'll tell you, I was talking to somebody about the broad highway and the narrow way. We were talking about plastic surgery. And I'm not putting down plastic surgery. I don't want to make anybody feel bad if they had plastic surgery. I was talking about plastic surgery, and he says, you ever think of getting plastic surgery? He says, I'm on the narrow way. It's the same thing as the wrinkle way. It's the wrinkle way, you know? Ecclesiastes said, vanity, vanity, it's all vanity. It's all about what do I look like, you know? When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing I thought of, I didn't think about God. The first thing I thought is I got to lose 50 pounds and stop biting my nails and get a haircut. The first thing you think about when you get into AA is you're getting better is I have to look better so I can grab some gal or I can be attractive to the opposite sex. You know why I thought that way? Because that's the way alcoholics think. You know how hard it is to get rid of that? You know, I'm 25, 30 years maybe in this program. Maybe it starts going away. You know, that's the thing that's going to kill you. That's the thing that's going to get you drinking. That's the thing that's going to get you feeling sorry for yourself. That's the thing when you talk about it at AA meetings, people say, now this guy's stopping. He's not preaching now. He's meddling. You know? I don't want to hear this cry. I didn't come here to hear this. I came here to hear about how do you stop drinking. I didn't come here to say, how do you stay away from my sacred idols. So then you start reading this thing, and if you understand what they're saying, it makes a lot of sense. It means a lot of different things. So let me read a couple things from this book. You know, it says right here. Let me get this. This is one of my favorite quotes. They asked me the other day, somebody wrote me a letter I'm supposed to be speaking up in Indiana somewhere. And they said, I want you to send us your favorite quotes from the book. And there's too many of them, really. But this was one of them that I'm going to send up to them because I think it capsulizes the whole thing in a nutshell. This is what happens when you go into the book. Okay. So they're talking about the selfishness, they're talking about the self-centeredness, they're talking about all the crap, you know, that I have. That I need to get rid of, and I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't even know I have it. Do you know how to get rid of it? I don't know how to get rid of it. How do you get rid of it? You eat, drink, and sleep it. You're going to leave. Listen, you know something? You're going to leave this room, get in your car, drive away, and you're going to be in it again. And the world ain't out there to help you get out of it. You know why? Because you're going to leave. You're going to leave and get into your car, and you're going to turn on, and you're going to look at there's going to be a big billboard. And it's going to show a Rolex watch, it's going to show a car, it's going to show a good-looking girl, it's going to show a good-looking guy. You're going to go home, you're going to turn the TV, it's going to show all sorts of shit that you should buy to make yourself feel better so that you can show that you're really something. Guys, you're going to get to watch those Cialis and Viagra commercials that basically tell you you're a piece of shit because you can't get a heart on, you ain't getting laid anyway, you know? You know what I mean? The gals, hey listen, I'm glad that we're getting it because the girls have been hammered with that horse shit for like hundreds of years. You know, I have three daughters. I feel sorry for them. They're so hammered with that. You better be good looking. You better have a nice body. You better have this going on. It's just broken the spirit of most of them. You know what I mean? We don't get hammered with that stuff. You know what I mean? We're old and fat. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Who cares, you know? Just give me a job and a lot of money. I'll get one of those Playboy bunnies, you know? That guy who used to own the, what those, whatever that team was, the basketball team, you know? And we get hammered with that crap. You know, I don't care whether you turn on the X Factor or entertainment, you get hammered with how you gotta be good looking, you have to be that, you have to be this. We're like swimming in a sea of crap. Somebody brings up, you know, they got some religious programs there on Sunday, you know, for 2 hours, nobody watches them, you know? You know, and it doesn't matter that the big book says we encourage church membership. It doesn't matter, say, like a family ought to join. It doesn't matter that we say we don't do that stuff because we're spiritual, not really spiritual. We're anything but spiritual because we come here and we say the Lord's Prayer one time and say the Serenity Prayer, and then we go out there running after everything that moves on the planet Earth that makes that our God and wondering why we feel bad all the time when all we're doing is focusing on stuff. Here it is. Here's the book, the big book out. Now, some of you guys think, well, this has nothing to do with AA, really? Well, that's because you don't know anything about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's because you don't know what this program is about. You think this is a program of don't drink and go to meetings. Somebody told you this is don't drink and go to meetings. We wouldn't even need a big book. Just need a matchbook cover. Don't drink. Somebody told you acceptance is the answer to all your problems. I mean, that's it. What do we need this book for? Hey, what do you need this for? Here's what it is. It says, page 68, here's the deal. Perhaps there is a better way. Perhaps there is a better way. You get that? Perhaps there is a better way of doing this. Perhaps there is a better way of living. Listen to this. We think so. Would you like to know what the better way is? Or would you, I mean, this is a step series. We're in AA. Would you like to know what the better way is? You might be shocked. It has something to do with what I've been talking about. For we are now on a different basis. A different basis. You know what that means? Now let me spell this out for you. It means a basis different than the basis you were on before you came in here. It's a different basis. Okay, let's okay. You ready? It's not the same deal, you understand? If you're doing the same, listen, if you're doing the same deal, if you're thinking the same things, if you're worried about the same stuff, if you're focusing on the same deal, if you're hanging around with the same people, you aren't on the different basis. If you're talking about the same shit, if you're worried about the same shit, if the same crap is the number one thing in your mind, you're not on the different basis. You're on the same basis, you're just sort of hanging around here and not drinking. I mean, just because you're in a garage doesn't mean you're a Chevy. You know, just because you're in AA doesn't mean you're in the fellowship of the Spirit. It doesn't take much to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. All you need is a desire to stop drinking. It doesn't even have to be an honest desire. It's a whole different thing to be in the fellowship of the Spirit. That's where they separate the men from the boys. The men are the ones who are trying to grow in the image and likeness of their creator. It's all about God. We think so, for we're now on a different basis. You ready for this? The basis of trusting and relying upon God. There it is. I'm not making this shit up. You know? I was on the basis of trusting and relying on Playboy magazine. I was going to be the Hugh Hefner of Miami. Because of a bunch of bad breaks and misunderstandings, it didn't work out. But you guys are cruel. Okay. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, just to the extent that we do what we think God would have us do, and focus on Him, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. Just to the extent that we focus totally on Him, and rely on Him, does He allow us to have a happy life. Is your life unhappy? You want to know why? Because you don't trust or rely on God. That's what the book of James is all about, which the whole thing came from the source book of James. It talks about the double-minded man, the man who doesn't trust and doesn't totally rely upon God. He says he's like a wave of the ocean. He goes this way, he goes that way, he second-guesses himself. He says that sort of man will get nothing. You know what the big book says? It says you'll get nil. You get nil, nothing, unless you let go absolutely. That's what it says. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we begin to outgrow fear. Oh, just in case you think they made a mistake when they said that. on page 63, where they talk about here's the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. We had to quit playing God and accepting what's going on in our lives, the way life is, and understand this is the way God wants it to be. And he must be teaching us a lesson, and rejoice in trials and focus on him. Just in case you missed that, on page 63 it says, when we sincerely took such a position, the position of trusting on God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. All sorts of remarkable things followed. I mean, you want some remarkable, I hope, if your life isn't remarkable, if you're not being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and experiencing much of heaven like these guys are, you may not be doing this thing even though you think you're doing this thing. You may be doing AA light. You know, the not drinking, go to meetings, go to, you know, hang around, have a couple of laughs and stuff like that, smoke a cigarette out in the parking lot, hook up with some gal, hook up with some guy, sort of AA light. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's not a higher power, by the way. He's the highest power.
Woo! Woo!
He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. That's what the last thing said. It says we trust in him and rely on him and perform his work and do what he would want us to be. We perform his work well. You know, the man who's doing this thing, the man in the sixth step, the man separated from the boy, you know what he's thinking about? He's thinking about what would God have me do? You know why that kid was not having a good time in that diner when he said, what do you guys do for fun? You know, because he wasn't focusing what was happening on that diner. He was worrying about where the gals are and when we're going to go to South Beach. And he was thinking about that stuff. And all I was thinking is, thank God, God put me in that position where I could try to help this kid because I know this is what God wants me to do. And I was having a great time. That's why I do this crap. That's why this is the greatest thing in the world for me. I'd rather be here than anywhere. Believe me, I'd rather be here than on a yacht. I'd rather be here on a plane. I'd rather be here than Paris. I mean, that stuff is crap compared to the privilege of being able to talk to you guys. It says right here, it says, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him, performed his work well, established on such a footing. This is what happens. We become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new, that's how you find out what's going on here. How much time do you spend thinking about yourself and worrying about yourself, and how much time do you spend thinking about other people? You spend a lot of time worrying about yourself and anxiety, you're not doing this to you. You haven't figured this thing out yet. You haven't thrown it all over to God. You know something? This ain't a dress rehearsal. You're not hurting me by thinking about yourself all the time and making fun of this stuff. You're only hurting yourself. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. Who could they be talking about? We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. And then it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. So there was this, so where does this fit into the 10th step? You know, the spiritual axiom, whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with us, you know, that kind of deal. So what does it fit? So there was a plane, this is a true story. In like the 1960s or 70s, I'm not sure when, I ought to look it up one day. This is a true story. This is, there was a plane that took off from Tokyo, Japan, and it was going to somewhere in Indonesia. And somehow, it went off course, and it was shot down by the Russians because it was 800 miles in the Russian airspace. And it ended up being shot down because it was 800 miles in the Russian airspace. And they couldn't understand how this plane that took off, you know, they have all these guidance systems, how it could be 800 miles in the Russian airspace, you know, 8 hours down the road. And when they got the black box and they got all the thing figured out, what they figured out was this, that these planes, as a matter of fact, I happen to be representing a guy right now who does all the guidance systems and navigation systems for jumbo jets and stuff like that. And he showed me all the, I'll tell you, once you see all this stuff, you know, you start hearing if it's like 1 degree off, the plane goes in the ocean or stuff like, you know, and it's all these planes are flown by these things, you know what I mean? Like by, you know, cell phones. And anyway, so the bottom line is what they found out was that when this plane took off from Tokyo, they plug in certain numbers into a computer and they push a button and the plane goes like the GPS, right to the deal, you know what I mean? Right to, you know, Bali, Indonesia. But when they plugged in the numbers, they were like, they put in like a 1 instead of a 2. They're like 1 digit off. Now, when the plane takes off from Tokyo, and it's, you know, it's a half an hour or an hour in the air, they don't realize that they're off course. But 8 hours into the flight, they're 800 miles in the Russian airspace. They're just going in the wrong direction, 800 miles in the Russian airspace, and they get shot down. And in our lives, what happens, what I find, is people drink. They don't necessarily drink. They don't drink because of something that happens right now. It may look like they drink because of something that happens right now. It may look like they commit suicide because of something that's happening right now, but you still don't sort of understand it because there are a lot of people that are going through the same exact thing. The same exact thing, and they don't drink. And what ends up happening is you find that the reason they drink and the reason they can't take it and the reason they get shot down and the reason it happens is because 8 years before, they were 1 degree off. They made a decision based upon self. They did something wrong. They were 1 degree off. They went off the narrow way. They went into the broad highway, and they couldn't tell that there was anything wrong, and all of a sudden, 8 years down the road, when they're 20 years sober, they're eating their gun, and their life is a mess, and they're totally destroyed, and they can't figure out why or how to get out of it. Now, how do you deal with that deal? How do you deal with that? How do you stay on the narrow road? How do you continue to take, how do you continue to do that? You know, is it like jail time? Like every day it's, just another. Well, in the book, it seems to indicate, which is true, that we continue to take personal inventory, but I'm just going to tell you, we got 5 minutes, I'm going to tell you my deal, okay? Somewhere along the line in this deal, okay, I was approached by somebody, and, I happen to firmly believe you are who you hang out with. You know, I heard a long time ago that the man and woman you'll end up being will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And trust me, the books I read depend upon who I hang out with. When I was about 15 years sober, and I had been reading all this stuff and doing all this stuff and doing all this stuff you guys do, some guy tapped me on the shoulder and said to me, he says, have you ever been to a Bible study? Now, I want to tell you something. Even though you may think AA is like against the Bible, that is not true. That is an untruth. We're not aligned with any particular religion, but you're not entitled to your opinion, you're not entitled to your own facts. And the truth of the matter is in the big book, it says we lose prejudice even against organized religion. Anybody ever read that? We begin to see where religious people are right. When you hear somebody rail against religion and say bad crap against religion, they're only doing that because they're not sober. You understand that? When you see somebody who's got a resentment or a hard-on for religion or putting down religion or putting down religious people, they're not sober. You can decide whether they're sober or not. You can decide what a resentment looks like. I'm just telling you what the big book says. We lose prejudice against organized religion. Everybody, including organized religion, we begin to see where religious people are right. Then you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and you see the books that they felt were absolutely essential were the Book of James, 1 Corinthians 13, and Sermon on the Mount. Now, you can say that's a bunch of bullshit and you got to watch it, but just don't talk to me about how you're doing the second step about love or tolerance or open-mindedness because you don't got it. That's all it says to me. Don't talk to me how you're thoroughly following their path because you ain't doing it. Because I know what their path was and I know what the word thorough means. So in an event like most alcoholics, somebody tapped me on the shoulder and he said, you know, you ever been to a Bible? And I said, well, I'm a Jewish kid from New York, you know. No. And, he said, well, you ought to go to this one. And I started thinking about my Aunt Joan and what she's going to think. She was dead 10 years, but I knew she was going to be pissed at me. I knew she'd be pissed at me anyway, because you're an alcoholic, you think about shit like that. You know what I mean? You think about dead people that are going to be mad at you, and it's pretty valid stuff, Because, everybody's thinking about me, and everybody's worried about me, and what will they talk about me in AA? Isn't religion bad, Somehow, some way, because of what I was doing in AA, I was given the decision and the understanding that decisions based upon fear are probably wrong. And instead of being a cynic, I became a skeptic. I went ahead and tried it out, and I went to this Bible study, and there were 50 guys there. I met my sponsor now. He's 57 years sober. He's a Baptist preacher. That's where I met him in a Bible study. And what it was like a discussion meeting about the original source material with 50 guys with gray hair that had been doing it for 60 years. Now, if you think this group is something, you ought to see the group I meet every Thursday morning at 7:30, where I bring the bagels. By the way, I bring the bagels and the cream cheese and everything, and we have a Bible study. And I started going to that one. And after I started going to that one, I started going to another one. And then I joined that church. And then I became a deacon, started a ministry over there. And I go, I go to church a lot. And it talks about going to church in there. Now, why does this have anything to do with the 10th step? Okay, I'll tell you why it has something to do with the 10th step. I'm an alcoholic. I'm no different than any of you guys. I am a whack job. Now, I'm not saying that you guys are whack jobs. I'm just talking. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? But I'm not saying you guys are crazy whack jobs, but hey, there's been talk. You know what I mean? You guys know what you are. You understand what I'm saying? We don't have to make it public, okay? We all know what's going on in your brain, and it ain't good, okay? I know what's going on in your brain because I know what's going on in my brain. I'm an alcoholic, and I know if I think these crazy thoughts, I'm not even going to say the thoughts because you're going to, it just embarrasses us all. You understand what I'm saying? It wouldn't embarrass me, but it would make you feel funny, and you wouldn't be able to look me in the eye anymore and everything like that. So it'll be our little secret because I like the fifth step and everything. You know there is shit you're not going to talk to anybody about it until they bury you, you know, because you know the crazy, crazy thoughts you guys think and what it does to your life, okay? So I'll tell you what the deal is. It's hard to stay in this road with what's going on out there, isn't it? There ain't nobody out there that's talking about this stuff. I mean, all your wife and kid, everybody else is saying, why do you still go to those meetings? The only thing they're saying about these meetings is, why are you still going there? They're trying to make you feel like you're stupid to go there. And half the people in AA, whenever you bring up God, are trying to make you feel like you're stupid. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the entire world's trying to make you think like you're stupid unless you get with the program. And the program is money, power, and prestige, which the big book says that's the bullshit. So tell me how you're going to do this thing for 30, 35 years, 40 years when you're doing this like two or three or four meetings a week, you know, and half the time you're not hearing this stuff. They're talking about other stuff like, you know, acceptance is the answer. But they're not talking about this stuff. And you walk outside and the next 24 hours you spend in the bullshit. How are you going to do this? Well, it's going to depend on who you hang out with. You're going to take on the coloration of the person you hang out with. And I hang out with, you know, we have a lunch group every single day. People don't believe it. A message goes out to 200 guys by text messages. There are some guys in here who get that message, and anywhere between 10 and 20 guys show up to lunch. We pray before lunch. Usually my sponsor is there, some other, and then we have a lunch together. I meet with guys who are in the program or out of the program, it doesn't matter, every single day. I go to church every Sunday, morning and night. You know what I mean? I go to Bible studies. I go to maybe six or seven AA meetings every week. Now you probably think I'm crazy. I'm crazy like a fox. I'm not worried about dying. I'm not worried about a lot of the stuff my sponsees are worried about. I don't go around sucking my thigh. Listen, I'm not perfect. I got my days, but there's a big difference between having a little bit of fear, a little bit of worry, 3 minutes a week, maybe twice a week, and having that crap going on in your mind all the time.
Amen.
You know, I find when I hang out with these men, when I hang out with people in AA, when I hang out with these people, and I listen to them, and the conversation is about God, and the conversation is with these men about that deal, you know what I mean? I find that I'm as good as the people I'm conversing with. If I'm conversing with some guy and all he's talking about is his money, and his property, and his car, or the last girl he did, or, you know, what's going on South Beach, or how much money, or what the job is. If I'm conversing with those people, you know what I'm thinking about when I leave those people? I'm thinking about that shit. That crap has never helped me out. Maybe it's helped you guys out. Maybe it makes you guys feel better. I've always felt less than, not as good as, or why don't I have that stuff, talking about that stuff. And you want to know something? As an alcoholic, I'm addicted to that bullshit. Unless you realize you're addicted like a moth to a flame to that bullshit, you don't understand what this disease is all about. I find out when I hang out with those people, focusing on that stuff, talking about that deal, reading that deal, you know what I'm focused on? I'm focused like a laser beam on that deal, on this deal. What they're talking about in this book, like a laser beam. Like the narrow, you know, many are called but few are chosen, like the narrow way. And so what happens is when you're doing the narrow way, not because you're good, not because you're cured, but because you're hanging around, as I'm hanging around these guys, it's almost like being on a highway with high, what do you call those things on the side of the highway? What do you call them that block you from going off the road or something? What did they say?
Guardrails.
It's like being on this narrow way with guardrails where you can't go off the road. Because wherever you start to go off the road, you know, there's my sponsor there, there's Pastor Carey there, there's this guy there, there's that guy there, there's this guy's looking. I can't go. You want to know something? Now, you may think that's a bad deal, but you want to know something? When you're driving on the narrow way with the high guardrails, guess what? You can take your hand off the wheel. You can take your hand off the wheel and go as fast as you want because you can't go off the tracks. You can experience that new freedom. You can experience that new happiness. You know, no matter how far down you go, you know, there's no problem there. You don't worry about how people feel about you. You don't worry about where the money is or anything like that. You don't worry. You don't live the life you used to live. Drinking is out of the question because you don't have to drink because you're living you have the joy of living going on. Does that make any sense? You understand what I'm saying? Now that's the deal. Now if I hurt somebody's feelings or you think it's a little too religious, I'll tell you what, at least I told you the truth. You know, there's a line in the book of Ezekiel says, you know, when you get this deal, he says, you're like a watchman, you know, and if you don't warn the people, their blood is on your hands. Hey, your blood ain't on my hands. You know, 6 years, 10 years down the road when your life is destroyed and everything, don't be telling people nobody ever told you this shit. You never heard it in AA. They never told you this crap. Now, it's your choice as to who you want to hang out with. It's your choice as to what books you want to read. It's your choice as to what you want to do. You know, it's my choice as to whether I want to reveal this stuff to you. You know, I know some people are going to do it. Sharice just told me you've been reading the book of James, right? You got 90 days and your sponsor and you are sitting down reading the book of James. You know how that makes me feel? Makes me feel like maybe something's being accomplished here. God bless you. Thank you very much.